Accession number 30649, Mr. Ted Hill, Reel 14. Are you talking about sort of recreations aboard HMS Tyrian while you were on border in 55? You were saying at night.
Yeah, while the regatta was on, and it went on for 3 or 4 days, the regatta, probably over a long weekend. But one of the things at night was to raid the other ships and get trophies from them. And, you know, to sneak on board and pinch a life belt or anything, which you had to declare at the end of the regatta so they got their equipment back. But one of the things that did happen on the Tyrian was that the engineer officer's cabin one night, when he wasn't there obviously, was completely stripped. Everything disappeared. All his clothes, his kit, everything.
This is the unpopular lieutenant commander.
Yeah. Everything disappeared. And they did find some of it floating in the harbour, but his cabin was totally emptied. And they never did find out who did it. I mean, the buzz was that it was someone on board the Tyrian. But it was, you know, all good fun and sport. We raided a few ships, and they were looking out for you. And if they saw you, they'd put a spotlight on you. If the ship was out at anchor in the harbour, they'd put a spotlight on you, and you had to go back. But if you could sneak in, we did get on a couple of ships, and I do remember we got a life belt off of one, and I think we pinched a couple of oars off another one, something like that, just for a trophy. But it all went back in the end. But that came to an end in September when I was drafted off the Tyrian, as the engineer officer had promised me. But before I was drafted, we went that summer to Cowes in the Isle of Wight for Cowes Week.
Now tell me about that.
Now in those days, the Cowes Week, they had a naval ship there as the guard ship, they called it. And our turn, the Tyrian was selected in 1955 to be the guard ship for Cowes Week. And that was the best week of my life in the Navy, I think.
Tell me about it.
Well, I mean, every night there was cocktail parties and dances and things in all the yacht clubs around Cowes, Cowes being the main one. And we were invited to them all off-duty sailors in uniform. Mind you, in those days we wasn't allowed ashore in civvies anyway. And they wanted to show a naval presence at all these things. So we were invited to all these, you know, dinners and lunches and cocktail parties, and, you know, we were in heaven because it was all free. And that was a great time. But it came to an end in September when I was drafted back to barracks, back to Pembroke Barracks in Chatham in September. And I was there, according to my papers here, for about 3 weeks till the 17th of October.
And nothing happening in that time then?
Just general duties in the barracks. And in October I was drafted to Jupiter, which I knew straight away, a planet, it's a reserve fleet. And it was a reserve fleet up the Gearlock, north of Glasgow.
You spell that G-A-E-R-L-O-C-H?
G-A-R-E-L-O-C-H, yeah, Gearlock. Which then was a reserve fleet station, the Gearlock. There was all the old wartime battleships and aircraft carriers. All the big ships were in the Gearlock. And I went up, and the accommodation ship alongside, and it was virtually alongside the main road, or this little road that went up the Gairloch to Gairloch Head from Helensburgh, which was at the bottom of the loch. And the ship laid alongside, we had a little tiny naffy canteen.
Now, which ship were you on then?
The actual ship was HMS Woolwich, which was another depot ship, but it was there as an accommodation ship for the reserve fleet people.
And that was HMS, Neptune, was it you said?
Jupiter. HMS Jupiter cap tallies we wore, because I was still an acting PO wearing sailor's rig, and it was just the badges on my arm, the crossed anchors instead of the single anchor, which distinguished me from a leading hand, that I was a petty officer. And as soon as I went on board, I was watch keeping, because they had a boiler going to supply the ship with electricity and heat and all that. And I'm going on there, one of the most junior POs, and a senior one came off for watch keeping, and I was on. Well, there was a handover period. This PO did a couple of watches with me, because the Woolwich was a very old ship. You know, all the machinery was a bit antiquated, and I needed to learn it anyway to sort out the systems. And him having a handover period, we used to work 24 about, so he did 3 watches with me, something like the afternoon, first and morning. Because on one of the watches, I think it was the forenoon watch, you used to change everything over. You'd flash up the other boiler and change over boilers. And no, that was once a week, the boilers, but all the machinery changed over every 24 hours, you know, the fuel pumps, the water pumps and all that sort of stuff, all changed over. And it was a quiet number. I mean, no one interfered with us. And I was technically, although I was a very junior PO, I was chief of the watch on the ship in the engineering department. But I couldn't leave the boiler room. And there was a couple of stokers in the engine room, one of them running a turbine and the other one a general run messages. So I was in charge of them, but I couldn't go down and see them because I couldn't leave the boiler room. If I wanted them, they had to come over to me, which I made them do quite quickly, you know, I insisted, and I had to insist, but they came over, and one of them was Wiggy Bennett, an old friend of mine from the Belfast. He was on my commission on the Belfast, and he was a bloke, he deserted while we were putting the Belfast in reserve. He was a Londoner, and he fooled the authorities, because they went, looked for him in London where he lived, but he actually went down, we were at Devonport, and he went down into Cornwall to Truro, hired a houseboat off the mayor of Truro, and he was living by getting things on HP, purchase and selling here. But they eventually caught him, and I was the leading hand of the patrol. They sent an engineer, 2 stokers and me to collect him from court in case they let him go and didn't put him in, you know, in prison. So we went down and we had to sit through old Wiggy's trial. And at the end of it, the magistrate said, something about, do you want to have time? And Wiggy said, yeah, I want to have time. I don't want to go back to the Navy. So the magistrate said, well, the time I meant was the time to pay the fine. And you are going back to the Navy. So they have an arrangement. They can stop it out of his pay through the Navy. And we took him back to the ship where he was further punished. And I had to take him ashore to one of the detention quarters in Devonport Barracks. But that's Wiggy on the Woolwich, this reserve fleet accommodation ship. He said, oh, it's lovely to see you and all that. He said, don't worry about food on the middle watches. He said, I'll bring you down steak, egg and chips and all this. Because he had all the contacts. He'd been up there a long time, old Wiggy. He'd been up there about 18 months and he loved it. Although he lived in London, he used to get off most weekends and hitchhike to London from the Gairloch. Bus to Glasgow, get on the main road and hitch down to London. And he used to hitch back. He'd come home for a weekend, you know, Saturday and Sunday, and be back for Monday morning. Not that it would worry him if he was a bit late and got a couple of days' punishment. He was that sort of bloke. And he used to run the football suite. And he said to me, anytime you're short of money, let me know and you'll win the suite that week. I suppose you could have said the terminology in those days for these sharp characters was spivs, and I suppose old Wiggy was one of the first spivs. But a very nice fellow for all that. And I was up there not a terrible long time. I mean, we had our runs ashore to Helensburgh, to Glasgow. One of the POs had a little Morris Minor car, and we used to go up to Loch Lomond sometimes in the evenings, the Loch Lomond Hotel, where they all loved to see us in uniform around the country up there. It was great.
So you were just looking after the engine of the Woolwich, or the engine room, yeah, the boiler room.
The boiler room, yeah, of the Woolwich. But it was, I mean, I went there October, the middle of October 55, and January 56, I left.
No, because why so short?
Well, that the reserve fleet at the Gairloch was manned by Chatham ratings. You know, and there was a few hundred Chatham ratings up there. And the HMS Superb, which was a cruiser, had come back to the UK from the West Indies to recommission. So they needed a full ship's company, you know, about 800 people. So they virtually emptied Jupiter, and a trainload of us came back to Chatham. And that was middle of January. January the 16th, and the next day I joined the Superb, January the 17th, because it was an overnight trip. Not without its drama, because I remember on Glasgow Station, we had to wait about three quarters of an hour for a train, and everybody disappeared into the bars around the station. And it was coming up to train time, and there was a chief ERA who was in charge of the draft, because it was, there were seamen, but he was a senior bloke, so he was in charge of the draft, and they'd requisitioned about half a train for us. It was one of the scheduled services, but we had half of it, or the Navy did. And he sent me and another bloke, Geordie Ather, who was a confirmed old petty officer, POME by this time, but a very hard drinking man. So he's this chief tiff, he said, right, you two POs, go around the bars and get them all back here quick. So he goes in the first bar and has a look round. There's no sailors in there. So old Geordie said, well, we can have half a pint, can't we? So I said, could we? And he said, oh, yeah, don't worry. We've got another 10 minutes. So we had half a pint and went. We found a few blokes and sent them back. And in the last bar on this station, Geordie wanted another half a pint, which we had. And when we got back to the platform, the blinking train had gone. So we asked one of the railway blokes on the platform, and he said, well, don't worry, there's another one follows that train in half an hour. So old Geordie said, well, we've got 25 minutes, we're going to have another pint. And I said, look, Geordie, we're going to leave the bar 10 minutes before the train due to leave. I said, if you want to stop and have more, fair enough, but I'm going to catch the train. And I said, you've got to remember, we've got no blinking tickets, because the chief had all that sort of stuff. Anyway, I got old Geordie on the train, and in those days the ticket collectors used to come round on those long distance trains, and we were fast asleep in no time. So we wasn't bothered much until in the early hours of the morning they came round, ticket collector, and he woke us up. And we had to explain what had happened. And he was quite okay. He said, well, you'll catch them at King's Cross, I think we were going into. You'll catch them when we get to King's Cross, because they're only 30 minutes ahead of us. And they were still there when we got there. And the Chief Tiffy wasn't very happy. He said, I would have put both of you in the rattle if you hadn't turned up on this train. And we explained. Probably told a few lies, but it was all brushed over. And we joined the Superb. Now,
she was at Chatham.
She was in Chatham Dockyard on Farewell Jetty in Number 3 Basin, which is the last stop before you go out through the lock down the Medway. And now we were all delighted to be drafted to HMS Superb.
Why?
Because the last three commissions had been in the West Indies, which is the best place to have a commission in the whole of the Navy, because you go around all the West Indian islands. You do the west coast, you do the east coast of America and Canada, and you go through the Panama Canal and do the west coast of America, you know, places like San Francisco and San Diego and all those places. And it was marvellous to have that draft. Well, we all got on board, and there was one PO on there, old Shiner Wright, who's still a friend of mine. I still see him occasionally. He had been on the previous commission in the West Indies, and although he was a married man with a couple of little kids, he volunteered to do the next commission because he had such a marvellous time out there. Well, when we got on board, they announced that we wasn't going to the West Indies. We were going to the East Indies, which was Ceylon. Now, the difference between Ceylon and the west coast of America is unimaginable. And old Shiner tried everything to get off the ship, and they wouldn't have it. You volunteered for the next commission, and we need you, you know. And off we went. We got in the lock. And you may have heard of pierhead jumps, people who get a last-minute draft and they jump on the ship as it's leaving. Well, we were actually in the lock. I mean, they open the inner gate from the basin and you go in the lock and they close that gate and open the one to seaward into the river. Well, in that period of us being in the lock, another PO, ME, or Stoker PO, as we still called ourselves, joined the ship, and it was old Smudger Smith, who'd been a friend of mine on the Belfast. And he got a pierhead jump, and off we went to the East Indies, which was Ceylon. We went through the normal way, through down to Gibraltar, Malta, did a bit of gunnery exercise because there was a gunnery range at Malta, up to Port Said, through the Suez Canal, and fueled at Aden, and we got into the Indian Ocean, and they were having trouble with one of the propeller shafts. The bearings were going on one of the shafts, and they actually stopped one and locked it. So we carried on three engines and three propellers, and we went to Colombo instead of Trincomalee because we needed to go in dry dock to sort this propeller business out, the shaft. So we went straight into dry dock, and we actually lived on the ship while it was in dry dock. There was toilets ashore, but we lived on the ship, took heat and power and all that from the dockside while they sorted out this propeller shaft, which they did. But it was great too.
Now, can I ask a bit about this? So what type of ship was the Superb? What was she like aboard, you know?
It was a cruiser, a very new cruiser. It didn't commission till the war ended, actually. It commissioned in 1945. So 1956 this was. It was still one of the newest ships in the Navy.
And was she more comfortable than, say, the Belfast, which is...
Oh, no. They're all much of a muchness. Comfort wise, I mean, they'd have things like the cinema, which was about all. The recreation spaces with the upper deck if you were off duty.
So, as a ship, she wasn't that much different.
Oh, no. No. The accommodation, although it was the same, was just in different places on different ships, you know, different classes, because there was about half a dozen different classes of cruisers. You know, town class, city class, colony class. Oh, they went on and on. But they were all much of a muchness.
And what were you still acting?
Well, I was acting PO.
Or whatever they call it, yeah.
And watchkeeping.
But acting.
Still acting PO.
Anything about your duties that were different or unusual on her?
No, I was straight in the boiler room. And watchkeeping straight away, because before a year was up, I had to sit an exam for a boiler room watchkeeping certificate, because you had to be qualified to take charge of a boiler room. So when was it? April 56. That was quick. I hadn't been on there long. April 56. I went on it in January. And I got my watchkeeping certificate in April. Blimey, I was still an acting PO then. But mind you, I was on this accelerated advancement business. So I was qualified as a chief of the watch, and I was still wearing sailor's rig. And when I got the boiler room certificate, I was put on duties as chief of the watch. B boiler room on there. Belfast was A, Superb was B boiler room, where the boilers face each other, and it's very, very cramped, you know, very claustrophobic down in the boiler rooms, because you're below the waterline when you're down there. Anyway, by the 5th of April... God, that's the anniversary of the date I joined the Navy, the 5th of April. I joined 5th of April 49, and I was awarded my boiler room certificate on the 5th of April 56. Now, when I came up to the year when I'd been an acting PO a year, if I was recommended, I would change rigs and I would go into fore and aft rig, you know, peak cap, brass buttons on my jacket and all that. Complete change of uniform, which the Navy paid for. They issued everything and gave me a grant to buy a best suit, you know, Barathea, I think the stuff was, we used to have. And I knew I would pass, I knew I'd get recommended because I was already ahead of the game. I shouldn't, normally, you wouldn't get a boiler room certificate until you were a fully confirmed PO. And I'd got it 6 months before. Well, no, 3-4 months before. So on the 22nd of July, I was confirmed as a PO and changed uniforms. And I stayed on the Superb.
Anything happened while you're out there? What are you doing at, well, you were at Colombo in Dry Dock, and then you went to Trincomalee, did you?
Trincomalee was the base. And we had to show the flag. I mean, we went up the Persian Gulf to show the flag, you know, round the Arab states, Bahrain, Kuwait, all those places. We went to East Africa, to Mombasa, and to Tanganyika.
Do you remember any of these places or anything that happened or what a typical...
Yeah. Well, when we were there, I think the first place we went up to, we went up to the Persian Gulf because the Suez Crisis had started. And I can't remember the date, but I know it was in 56 and we hadn't been out there long. I think we came out of dry dock, went up to Trincomalee and picked the Admiral up, because we were the flagship. We relieved the cruiser on station up there, got the Admiral, and I think we went straight up the Persian Gulf, because the Suez Crisis had started, and the Arabs were attacking the oil fields in the Persian Gulf. And we carried a company of the Glorious Gloucesters from Korea. You know, they were famous in Korea, the Gloucesters. We carried a company of them, and they were very, very friendly to us who had the Korean medal ribbons, because we were there with them. And strangely enough, I don't know why it happened, that this company of Gloucesters were accommodated throughout the ship. You know, there was no mess big enough for them all to go on, but there was two or three soldiers on each seaman's messes, stoker's messes. And the stoker PO's mess, we had a lovely little mess up in the bridge structure. And we had the sergeant major of the Gloucesters, the company sergeant major in our mess, which was great. He was a smashing bloke. But you wouldn't believe it was the same bloke when he got out drilling the soldiers or putting them in line. He used to scream at them, which we wasn't used to. But there wasn't enough of them, a company, to cover all the oil fields. So what they did, they made naval landing parties. So each department on the ship had to supply an officer, a petty officer, and six hands, and I was selected as the petty officer for the engine room landing party.